Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, March 27th, 2026. We turn first to page one, where the main story is about Women's History Month, with the title Increasing Representation. Bloomington Normal Police aim to recruit more women officers. This story is datelined Bloomington. Bloomington Normal first responders are looking to make their departments more reflective of the communities they serve, including recruiting more women. While women make up about half of the United States population, only 12% of police officers are women, according to the National Policing Institute. Ultimately, a department that reflects the diversity of its community is a stronger, more effective department. That's not just my belief. It is backed by research and, more importantly, by the experience of working alongside exceptional women in this profession every day, said Normal Police Chief Steve Petrilli. Preliminary research findings suggest women in law enforcement use less force and excessive force than men, and women are named proportionately less often in complaints and lawsuits, according to research published in the American Journal of Criminal Justice. Although women officers in Bloomington Normal say their professional experience aligns with those findings, they have not always felt they could measure up to their male counterparts. Officers Kim Ridland of the Illinois State University Police Department said early in her career, a male superior at an agency in Knox County made a comment that almost made her quit. A lieutenant straight up told me to my face, "Women do not make as good of cops as guys do," Ridland said. It was a good old boy network. Although she worked with other commanding officers who were fantastic, and there were a few other women in that department during the more than 7 years she spent at that agency, Ridland decided to make a change, hoping for a less aggressive approach to policing, more focused on problem-solving through listening. If you look at the statistics, women have a lower reported use of force and women have a lower reported complaints that come in. Statistics don't lie, Ridland said. Her experience coming to ISU almost 7 years ago was entirely different, she said. Unlike her former department, several women welcomed her to the university's police force. One of those women was Deputy Chief Nicole Bleichner, who served ISU for 24 years and had an extensive career in law enforcement before that. When Bleichner started at ISU PD, 10 women were on staff, which is unheard of, she said. We had more per capita than any other police department in the state of Illinois when I first started. Her transition to that team came naturally, Bleichner said, because the ISU's police department had already established a rapport, not only among the officers, but also with the university they served. She also noted the police department hosts self-defense classes for women in the community. Sometimes being a woman is an advantage, sometimes being a woman is not, Bleichner said, explaining that she experienced bias and disrespect at other law enforcement agencies in her career. But she did not let that negativity discourage her. Bleichner said she continues to learn and she prides herself in knowing her job and how to do it well. As a woman, if you want to be a police officer, you really need to learn. You need to be smart, and that's what you rely on, she said, because there will be people out there that will take advantage of that. And for whatever reason, you just need to make sure that you have all your ducks in a row. Women who work in the Bloomington and Normal police departments told the Pantograph they feel a sense of community and support from peers and administrators alike. Bloomington Normal and ISU officers said they have worked hard to expand the number of women on staff, and they are committed to building a culture of respect, inclusion, and mutual support. In Bloomington Normal, both municipal departments have enlisted in the 30 by 30 initiative, a goal to reach 30% female officers by the year 2030. The Normal Police Department is 12% women, with 10 sworn female officers, right in the national average of roughly 12 to 15%. But the Bloomington Police Department has 8 sworn officers who are women, making up 5% of its force. ISU PD has 29 officers and 7 are women. Women officers across Bloomington Normal agreed their departments lean on women to solve certain crimes. For example, they are often requested on sexual assault cases and other sensitive cases, said Detective Nicole Bruno of Normal Police. Madison Castillo, also an officer for Normal, said, "Last week I had 3. It happens all the time." Bleichner credited women's compassion, not necessarily that men lack, but it's just different, she said. Although men are also victims of sexual assault, women experience sexual violence at a disproportionately higher rate. 1 in 10 men experience sexual assault, compared to 1 in 6 women, according to the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. Bleichner and the other officers said women typically prefer talking to another woman when they are victims of sexual or domestic violence, especially when they were hurt by a man. But it goes with all the other diversity that is important too, Bleichner added. The ISU PD deputy chief compared the experience to some women being more comfortable with a female doctor. Bloomington Police Officer Jordan Tiemann said women's perspectives can contribute to them being good police officers. Obviously, we know that men and women think differently, the way your actual brain is structured. So you go to a call with a male officer, and your approach might be different, and sometimes your approach might be better, Tiemann said. Sexual assault, domestic violence cases, and cases involving children are among the cases that Tiemann said she believes women are more suited to handle. Ridlin also noted women police officers have different bedside manner than their male counterparts, which helps them communicate and be empathetic with victims, and police administrators agreed. When a victim of domestic violence or sexual assault comes forward, having a female officer available can make the difference between someone sharing their story or staying silent. That matters enormously to the outcomes we're able to achieve, Petrilli said. While some of the women officers always knew they wanted to get into law enforcement, others found themselves in this profession by chance. For Bruno, the path was linear. Her uncle worked in law enforcement and inspired her from a young age, she said. And then, in junior high, she and her dad were in a bad car crash in which they were hit by a drunk driver. Bruno said she felt more solidified in her dream to work in law enforcement when her former DARE, Drug Abuse Resistance Education officer, responded to the scene. "Just seeing him immediately calmed me, reassured me, and it was a pretty bad accident. And then it just kind of kept reaffirming, yes, this is what I want to do," the detective said, now in her 23rd year in law enforcement. Bleichner said she has known since she was 13 that she wanted to be a police officer. She recalled when her uncle, former Bloomington Police Chief Dennis O'Brien, came home while she was watching a scary movie at his house with her cousin. "He was working midnights and he stood in the doorway," Bleichner said. "I just remember him standing there in his full uniform and I got scared because he scared us. But when I looked up at him, I was like, that is what I want to be when I grow up." Similarly, Ridlin knew that she wanted to get into law enforcement since she was little, hoping to become a Secret Service agent like her dad, who tried to discourage her and her brother from going into law enforcement. Neither sibling listened, and they both now are police officers, Ridlin said with a laugh. Bleichner and Bruno studied criminal justice at Illinois State University, where they earned bachelor's degrees. Bleichner also holds a master's degree in legal studies. Ridlin has a bachelor's and master's in law enforcement and justice administration, which she attained from Western Illinois University. And for Tiemann and Castillo, law enforcement came to them in other ways. Castillo was in nursing school when she found her calling in law enforcement. Just a year away from earning her degree, she reevaluated her future and transferred to ISU to pursue criminal justice. Along with the same lines of nursing, of caring for people, you know, that first responder, that public servant route, Being able to make that change, that impact, is what drove her, she said. Tiemann, who has been with the Bloomington Police Department for 9 years, also saw herself working in healthcare. She studied biology and was pre-med at Southern Illinois University with minors in chemistry and forensic science. She always had an interest in crime, and initially her goal was to become a forensic pathologist. But after realizing she did not want to go to school for a billion years, she decided to go to the crime scene route and became a police officer. Petrilli said he was proud when his department promoted its first female supervisor, Sergeant Serena Cunningham, marking a significant milestone in the history of the Normal Police Department. Having women in law enforcement is not just good policy, it's good policing. Women officers consistently demonstrate strong communication and de-escalation skills that help us resolve situations peacefully and build trust with the communities we serve, Petrilli said. Officers and leaders in other departments agreed, noting the importance of having local police forces that have representation of all genders and races. I mean, 50% of your population is women, so if you're looking at trying to get demographics that are reflective of the community, you got to have women representation, Ridland said. The officers also said they have an opportunity to set an example for young girls, listing that as another important reason to have more women in law enforcement. You want to be a role model for younger girls and teenage girls that might want to do this job someday, Tiemann said. If they don't see other females doing a role like this, then they might not want to even consider that for themselves. Castillo said the Normal Police Department offers an inviting atmosphere, thanks to other women who came before her, like Bruno. Be true to yourself. At the end of the day, the job is going to require a lot out of you, and as long as you have good, solid morals and you stay true to that, you will succeed in this career, Castillo said. Bruno agreed, adding, "This is exciting to me to see young women getting into this field." Our next front page story is about the Middle East, titled "Iran and the U.S. Harden Positions. Tehran Tightens Grip on Strait of Hormuz." This is an Associated Press story, datelined Dubai, United Arab Emirates. Iran and the United States appeared at an impasse Thursday, with each side hardening its position over talks and setting the stage for another potential escalation in the Middle East war. Thousands more U.S. troops neared the region. Israel sent more troops into southern Lebanon to fight the Iran-backed militant group Hezbollah, and Tehran tightened its grip on the crucial Strait of Hormuz. Sirens over Israel warned of barrages of incoming Iranian missiles, and Gulf nations worked to intercept fire. Heavy strikes were reported in Iran's capital and other cities. In a war that appears defined by who can take the most pain, the U.S. offered shifting but ambitious objectives, including ensuring Iran's missile and nuclear programs are no longer a threat and ending Tehran's support for armed groups in the region. Washington at one point also pushed for the overthrow of Iran's theocracy. While the U.S.-Israeli campaign hit Iran's military and government hard, killing top leaders and striking scores of targets, Iran continues to fire missiles, and there is no sign of an uprising against the government. For Iran's leadership, by contrast, merely outlasting the onslaught could be seen as victory. It might hope to get the U.S. to back down by roiling the world economy with its stranglehold on the Strait of Hormuz, raising prices at the pump for drivers, prices in the grocery store for families, and costs for businesses the world over. Short of a negotiated solution, the U.S. would need a dramatic escalation to end Iran's attacks and restore the free flow of goods through the strait, where 20% of all traded oil and natural gas is transported in peacetime. Iran rejected a ceasefire proposal put forth by the U.S. while putting forth its own demands. President Donald Trump's envoy, Steve Witkoff, confirmed the U.S. presented a 15-point action list to Iran, delivered through Pakistan, as a framework for a possible peace deal. If we can convince Iran that this is the inflection point, with no good alternatives for them other than more death and destruction, we have strong signs that this is a possibility. And if a deal happens, it will be great for the country, for Iran, and the entire region, and the world at large. Trump vowed to strike Iran's power plants if it does not fully reopen the strait, and his new deadline for that looms this weekend, when the war will also mark a month. But a Gulf Arab bloc said Thursday that Iran is now exacting tolls from ships to ensure their safe passage through the waterway. Iran blocks ships from the strait that it perceives as linked to the U.S. and Israeli war effort, while it lets through a trickle of others. Jason Mohammed el-Budawi, Secretary General of the Gulf Cooperation Council, a bloc of six Gulf Arab nations, said Iran is charging for safe passage. The Fars and Tasnim news agencies, both close to Iran's paramilitary Revolutionary Guard, quoted a lawmaker as saying that Parliament is working to formalize that process and that it was natural for ships to pay for it. Lloyd's List Intelligence called it a de facto toll booth regime, saying that at least two vessels paid in yuan, China's currency. Iran's grip on the strait and relentless attacks on Gulf regional energy infrastructure sent oil prices skyrocketing and concerns of a global energy crisis surging. Brent crude, the international standard, was up Thursday more than 40% from February 28th when the war started, and Germany's defense minister, Boris Pistorius, called it a catastrophe for the world's economies. Using Pakistan as an intermediary to Iran, Washington delivered a 15-point ceasefire proposal, which includes the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz. A day after claiming Iran wants to cut a deal, Trump posted on social media Thursday that Tehran needs to get serious soon on negotiating an end to the war before it is too late, because once that happens, there is no turning back and it won't be pretty. Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said in an interview on state TV that his government has not engaged in talks to end the war and does not plan to. He said the U.S. tried to send messages to Iran through other nations, but that is not a conversation nor a negotiation. Egypt is also acting as a go-between, according to its foreign minister. Press TV, the English-language broadcaster on Iranian state television, said Iran has its own five-point proposal, which included reparations and recognition of its sovereignty over the Strait of Hormuz. Meanwhile, a group of ships drew closer to the Mideast with about 2,500 Marines, also at least 1,000 paratroopers from the 82nd Airborne, trained to land in hostile territory to secure key territory and airfields, were ordered to the region. And since the war began, more than 1,900 people have been killed in Iran, the deputy health minister told Al Jazeera. 18 people have died in Israel, while three Israeli soldiers have also been killed in Lebanon. At least 13 American troops have also been killed, and more than a dozen civilians in the occupied West Bank and Gulf Arab states also died. Our next front page story is about housing, titled Pritzker Promotes Build Initiative. Dateline, Bloomington. Governor J.B. Pritzker visited with community and business leaders from Bloomington Normal and around McLean County to talk about lowering housing costs and building homes. We are in a period of high demand and low supply, and we are all working hard to try to figure out what the next steps are, Pritzker said Wednesday. We are seeing a struggle to buy, to pay rent. And there just is not enough housing being built anywhere in the state, and we have got outdated laws that are making it too difficult, too expensive for more building. The roundtable discussion was held on the second floor at the McLean County Museum of History, at 200 North Main Street in Bloomington, and touched on the governor's Building Up Illinois Development, or BUILD, the Build Initiative. The topic of housing has become more prevalent, with the state reporting a significant housing shortage of about 142,000 units and needing more than 225,000 new units over the next 5 years. In Bloomington Normal, housing challenges have become even more pronounced as local businesses and manufacturers report job growth outpacing available housing. Because of the low housing stock, potential homebuyers are experiencing aggressive pricing that usually leads to competitive bids and closing costs well beyond a property's assessed value. Supply as a whole is down approximately 85% over the last 10 years. Supply just is not there, said Brandon Schaffer, a Bloomington Normal realtor. At the moment, when a home comes on the market between that $150,000 and $250,000 price point, you don't have one buyer looking for that home. You've got dozens of buyers looking for that home. Creating ways to adjust the requirements surrounding housing and adding homes could lessen the demand and supply and level the price of properties out, he said. Local employers like Yumi Shim, president of OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center, said the healthcare workforce is also being priced out and having to find options elsewhere. The community is facing an estimated shortfall of 4,500 affordable housing units, Shim noted, which is why the build plan is significant steps toward addressing housing supply challenges, not only locally, but across the state. Nurses, technicians, aides, and support staff face challenges caring for a community they cannot afford to call home, Shim said. If we want reliable, compassionate care, we must treat workforce housing as essential infrastructure, just as critical as the clinics and hospitals themselves. Jim Rogel, vice chair of the McLean County Board, said county residents are continuing to experience rising property taxes, and elected officials in surrounding municipalities are asking for changes in zoning laws and other areas to address housing shortages. There's a lot of those people that live in these communities in Stanford, Chenoa, and Hudson, and their property taxes are going up, and that's what they're seeing, Rogel said. We are trying to do as much as we can to address the housing, but if we can get that mid-level housing, that more affordable housing, you're going to be able to level out, and the houses in my neighborhood won't be doubling or tripling in the next 4 to 5 years. The state legislature is currently advancing legislation that would remove barriers, not only making it easier for developers to build, but for home buyers and renters to live. Legislation like the Illinois Housing Choice and Middle Housing Act would mandate that municipalities allow middle housing options, including duplexes, fourplexes, and townhouses in areas currently zoned for single-family homes, as well as increase housing density by reducing minimum lot size to 2,500 square feet. Another piece of legislation would legalize accessory dwelling units, which may be constructed as a new structure or from an existing structure like garages, attics, basements, and backyard cottages. Noah Tang, founder and president of Strong Towns Blono, said accessory dwelling units would allow residents and families to stay in their preferred neighborhoods throughout their lifetime instead of being priced out and having to find a new community. We want to see neighborhoods that you can stay effectively your entire life in and build deep ties and build that social capital, Tang said. So with the build plan here and the accessory dwelling units with all the missing middle, you will allow neighborhoods capping their price points. Other legislation aims to reform building codes by allowing single stairway residential building up to 6 stories, reducing municipal parking requirements, mandating faster municipal construction permit reviews, and increasing transparency for fees imposed by municipalities on new residential developments. The build initiative also includes capital investment from the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, which would administer $100 million to address infrastructure barriers that prevent housing projects from breaking ground. The state also launched a new program with the Illinois Housing Development Authority called IHD Access Home, which offers up to $15,000 in down payment and closing cost assistance for eligible first-time homebuyers. This is not designed for high-end development. The build plan is really focused on middle housing, Pritzker said. When we talk about affordable housing, we are talking about the affordability of middle housing for people who earn $75,000 to $175,000 and cannot rent or buy a home affordably anymore. I'm going to move to a local story titled Fire Departments Embrace Diversity, Dateline Bloomington. Bloomington and Normal fire departments both employ two women each, but they are still working to increase representation to be reflective of the community. Nationally, 4 to 9% of firefighters are women, with the percentage varying based on whether they are career or volunteer firefighters, according to Women in Fire, a nonprofit advocacy organization. Decades ago, the Normal Fire Department broke barriers when hiring its first woman firefighter, Robin West. She spent 25 years on, but we haven't had any women since her, said Normal Chief Mick Humer. Since West's retirement about a decade ago, Humer said his department had not seen any other women until about 2 years ago. First of all, I think it's important for us to look like the community we represent or respond to, whether that be female, African American, Hispanic, you name it. We need to look like the community we assist, he said. He said women bring a unique aspect to fire service, noting they might be better with medical calls or calls involving children. Not to say that men are not great, but sometimes it's just a little more easy for a patient to talk to someone of their own gender, he said. One of the women serving Normal Fire is firefighter and paramedic Chloe Burcham. Approaching her 2-year anniversary at the department in June, Burcham reflected on the journey that led her there. I did not realize this was the path I wanted to pursue until I went through basic training in the military, she said. During a field exercise focused on emergency medicine and patient care, I discovered a passion for EMS that immediately clicked with me. Burcham emphasized the importance of diversity in patient care, noting patients from all backgrounds, and specifically women, can help with a plethora of emergencies. She specifically noted OBGYN emergencies, sexual assault cases, and general care when trust matters. When we include both men and women working together in a tough situation, we can communicate more effectively and come up with a wider range of solutions, thus improving patient care and having better scene management in a fire emergency, she said. And she encouraged other women to follow their dreams, too. She initially planned to be an elementary school teacher, but she said she has since discovered a challenging yet rewarding career in helping others through being a first responder. As I learned more about the fire service, I saw how meaningful and dynamic that role is as well, she said. I decided to give it a chance and quickly found that I was just as passionate about firefighting as I was about EMS. Burcham said the best thing about being a woman in her field is the ability to inspire girls of all ages to get into whatever career they set their mind to. I think it's great that we were able to recruit these female firefighters. Both have military service, and one is currently on deployment right now, Humer said. I think that's great because it fits in with the paramilitary style of the department. And he continued, coming in the door, they really understood what the job was and fit in with their experience, solidifying that. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, March 27th, 2026. I look forward to reading part two with you next.